bushfires are engulfing large areas of the east coast of Australia, with smoke covering large parts of New South Wales, the ACT and southern Queensland. On Wednesday, the air quality index in parts of Sydney reached 11 times higher than hazardous. Doctors for the Environment Australia has called for a federally coordinated national meeting to direct action in response to the unprecedented public health threat from months of bushfire smoke in eastern Australia. To examine the issues arising from these events, I'm speaking to Dr. Richard Yin, Honorary Secretary of Doctors for the Environment Australia. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you, Dave.
Given the magnitude and widespread coverage of the bushfires, how many people could potentially be affected by these?
In relation to the smoke, if you're talking about smoke pollution, I don't think we have clear data. I can give you some research estimates of what happened over Sydney over the period from 2001 to 2013 in relation to smoke from 184 bushfire incidents. They were associated with 197 premature deaths, 436 cardiovascular hospitalizations in related to the heart, and 787 respiratory or lung conditions requiring hospitalization. So that's a rough figure from that period. But you know, we're talking about conditions here that are really we haven't seen before, and much, much higher levels of air pollution extending over a much longer period. So I'm not sure that we have the data. There was a recent release from the Thoracic Society, which is the peak health authority for health professionals, that quoted something like a 30% increase in ambulance call-outs for respiratory conditions, and roughly the same sort of things for ED presentations to emergency departments.
So what's the potential for these health effects to have a lasting impact on people?
The primary concern, I think, is first of all the acute effects. And those acute effects are partly respiratory, as I've outlined, but there's also partly heart-related. So we know that high levels of air pollution, including air pollution from smoke, can actually exacerbate heart and lung conditions and also diabetes. And I think that's the immediate focus. And the concern is for those people that have borderline control and those people that are frail, the elderly, for example, or those with chronic lung disease, chronic heart disease, that we're going to tip them over, in a sense, where their condition gets much, much worse and this issue is about death and severe exacerbations of their conditions that are difficult to control. In terms of the longer term, there's not really good data. There's not really good data as to what the outcome is going to be. We sort of try to compare it with air pollution data in general, and we know that long-term air pollution, particularly related to really small particulate matters, so-called PM 2.5, they're really teeny particles, about 3% of the diameter of a hair. So we're talking about those sort of particles. And we know that long-term exposure to those particles causes a number of conditions related to the lungs, related to the heart, related to strokes. But here we're talking about a pulse that's maybe lasting several weeks, several months. And yet we're not entirely clear what the outcome might be. And it might be more like smoking. You get a level of exposure, but it's the chronic ongoing exposure that's going to be the concern. That's not to diminish it. It's just to say that in the end, when things settle down, conditions might revert and that little pulse may not have a significant long-term impact.
Amongst the population, which groups are most vulnerable to bushfire smoke?
The groups that are most likely, as I've described, are those that are elderly, those with pre-existing diseases like lung diseases like asthma, heart diseases that maybe suffer from angina or heart failure, people with diabetes, where their diabetes might be poorly controlled in the context of bushfire smoke. Pregnant women are more susceptible, and there's a little concern about air pollution and preterm babies, for example, and the very young, under one, maybe under five, where we know that their body responds differently to pollution and they might have a longer-term effect.
So in terms of preventative measures that individuals can take, there are, you know, the big thing is about people buying masks, and I've heard that in places like Bunnings running out of masks and things like that. And I heard someone the other night talking about how they were in Sydney and went to the chemist to get an asthma puffer and the chemist had masks already lined up on the counter, and as well as a collection of asthma puffers.
It's pretty tragic in a sense. What we can do is really limited. So the idea is to try to stay indoors where possible and not expose yourself to the outdoor pollutants. But the trouble is, over a long period of time, the pollutants actually come inside. The mask work if they fit well. They don't work terribly well if you have a beard. They may not work terribly well with people with certain type of face type, I'm sure. And so there's a limit as to how much you can avoid that air pollution. Probably the only meaningful thing, high-efficiency particulate air filters, which cost a bomb. I think they're well over $1,000, that actually remove the particulate matter in air pollution and purify the air. But a vast majority of people won't be able to afford that. So I think it's limited what we actually can do in these conditions.
So given problems with health, how are emergency medical services coping with this, given the scale of the bushfires?
In the context, first of all, we want to talk more broadly about climate change and our overarching concern, of which the bushfires have highlighted. The problem with considering this issue is it's not one thing. Our concern relates to climate change and the multiple impacts and the compounding impacts that climate change has. So the drought conditions have created conditions that have allowed this fire to occur at a scale that we've never seen before. So one is that we've got emergency services trying to cope with unprecedented conditions, and they're going to have to continue working in these conditions well through the summer. And I don't know how they're going to cope on an ongoing basis, because this has never happened before. We then have the air pollution effect in the major cities, and we're emergency departments that are far more busy than what they've operated previously or what the baseline is, and that's going to be sustained for a period of time. And we know that there are health impacts occurring in the community from the smoke. Over here in Perth, where I live, there's a heat wave predicted, and that means temperatures on average, both day and night temperatures combined, will be over 30 degrees. And all indication is that that heat wave is moving east. So what you then have are heat wave conditions that then follow potentially, and we know that heat kills. So we know that the bushfires, the Black Saturday fires, might have killed around 170 people. We know in the preceding week the heat waves killed some 340 or 350 people, those that were frail, those that had pre-existing diseases, again, like lung diseases, heart diseases, kidney diseases. So then you've got another load that actually comes on in the context of emergency departments and how they can cope. So you see, there's these compounding effects that occur, and you get heat waves and maybe you have a blackout. You have problems with refrigeration, context of problems with refrigeration and cold chains. You have maybe outbreaks of salmonella because food isn't kept at appropriate temperatures. Vaccines aren't managed properly because something's broken down. So all these multiple impacts are occurring over this period of time, and this is what has been predicted. This is what our grave concern is in relation to climate change. And what's occurring now is that it gives us an idea, an image of what the future might look like if these become more frequent. It's a complex, difficult situation, and the amount of research that's being done on it is just about zero. I think we've allocated 0.01% of funding, of health funding, to actually researching climate change and health.
Now, Doctors for the Environment is just one of many medical organisations worldwide that recognise that climate change is one of the greatest threats to public health. Yet in Australia, the federal government has yet to develop an appropriate government response to climate change. You've said, quote, "The reaction of the Morrison government leaves many of us horrified," unquote. Could you go through the shortcomings of the government response across the various areas?
It's really difficult to list, you know. The primary concern, I think, for all Australians and the health sector and all Australians is a realisation of the potential of this problem. And I think, as I said, I think the fires have highlighted the potential impacts across a whole range of sectors. And what we're needing at this point in time is leadership that acknowledges that this is a problem, that it is a serious problem, that it has widespread impacts, and we need to do something about it. Now, the fundamental cause is our rising emissions, and yet all credible authorities do not believe that Australia is doing enough, that our emissions actually have been rising over the last few years, and to actually comply with our Paris Agreement targets, what we've used is an accounting loophole to actually even meet the targets that most people see is actually weak. So what we'd like to see from government, from the side of actually mitigation, are policies that actually will reduce our carbon emissions. On the other side is that you have to acknowledge the potential problem, and then unfortunately we're already locked in for further warming based on the carbon emissions that are occurring now. We're locked into further warming, and the country needs to prepare, and it needs to be prepared from a whole range of sectors, and one of them is just simply the health sector. Has been shown there's a whole range of health impacts, and the country needs to prepare for what those impacts are. Emergency services need to prepare. The health sector needs to prepare. You know, how we build our cities, they need to be prepared. So there's a range of things, and that requires for a planning as to what's got to happen. So I think that there's a whole number of things that have to happen, and at the moment it looks like we're heading towards an abyss where in a train and the driver is basically driverless, or someone that doesn't acknowledge the direction that we're actually heading in.